So what is really going on here, if it's not the fact that Paul is saying it's okay to eat food sacrificed to idols? New Testament scholar Mark Nanos suggests that the weak in 1 Corinthians chapter 8, with offended consciences, are not fellow believers, but rather non-believing idolaters. Nanos writes, "The impaired are to be treated differently than fellow Christ believers, those being named brother and sister. Rather than being judged, polytheists are to be gained by behavior consistent with the confession of Christ's faith. That involves not eating any food known to be set apart to idols. It involves not insulting the mistaken belief of the impaired, but learning how to develop speech and behavior calculated to implicitly undermine them. The knowledgeable are to relate to the impaired on terms that will communicate the knowledge of Christ to them, which means they must not live in a way that can be mistaken to deny their confession of the One." This really makes good sense. After all, it is not just the believer whom Messiah died for, but rather all humanity. In Romans, Paul tells us, "While we were still helpless, at the right time, Messiah died for the ungodly." Mark Nanos also points out that Paul's "don't ask, don't tell" approach to idol food here is very similar to the rabbinic approach in the Mishnah in Tractate Avodah Zarah. "But all other things, if not be specified that they are for idolatrous purposes, are permitted to be sold to idolaters. But if it be specified that they are intended for idolatrous practices, they are prohibited." If the believer did not know, it was permissible, but once he knew, it was forbidden, especially for the sake of his pagan neighbor, who might think that a believer in the one true God could also participate in idolatry. Paul does not take idolatry lightly. His words and feelings about the subject of food sacrificed to idols are made very clear later on in 1 Corinthians chapter 10, verses 18 through 21. "Look at the nation of Israel. Are not those who eat the sacrifices sharers in the altar? What do I mean then? That a thing sacrificed to idols is anything? Or that an idol is anything? No. But I say that the things which the Gentiles sacrifice, they sacrifice to demons, and not to God. And I do not want you to become sharers in demons. You cannot drink the cup of the Lord and the cup of demons. You cannot partake of the table of the Lord and the table of demons." As a believer in Messiah, one could not participate in both worlds. Paul paints quite the black and white situation, but this was necessary for new Gentile believers who were immersed in an almost entirely pagan world. New Testament scholar Ronald Fung comments, "Paul clearly regards idols as mere non-entities, yet he recognizes that demonic forces lurk behind them, so that to take part in a pagan sacrificial feast is to become partners with demons." Another concern amongst the new Gentile converts was that they would cease participating in their former idolatrous festivals and holidays. Paul explicitly prohibits participation in pagan festivals in his letter to the Galatians in chapter 4 and verses 8 through 10. "Formerly, when you did not know God, you were enslaved to those that by nature are not gods. But now that you have come to know God, or rather to be known by God, how can you turn your back again to the weak and worthless elementary principles of the world, whose slaves you want to be once more? You observe days and months and seasons and years." While some commentaries are tempted to see these as referring to the Jewish festivals, there are issues with this interpretation. For example, Paul here is writing to Gentiles who were formerly pagans. Again, we turn to the writings of Mark Nanos. This interpretation of Paul's reference to pagan timekeeping schemes related to the observation of local and imperial cults makes sense of the fact that Paul has identified the addressees as former idolaters in this context, not former righteous Gentiles or Jews. If these Gentiles were returning to anything, it would have been pagan celebrations, and not Jewish festivals of which they had no previous familiarity. Why would they want to return to former pagan ways? Nanos points out that because these Gentiles were not proselytes nor candidates for conversion, they would have not been protected from their pagan civic responsibilities by the authority of Jewish communal identity. Therefore, they would have had to face consequences, often harsh, for not participating in these required pagan festivities. More than just a religion, it was their duty to the state. In turn, it would have been tempting to just go through the motions of these pagan rituals rather than suffer for the cross. Further evidence for this interpretation is found in chapter 5 of Galatians, where Paul implores these Galatian Gentiles to flee from a laundry list of immoral activities, which includes idolatry and sorcery. My colleague Daniel Lancaster suggests that the same sort of concern is going on in Romans chapter 14, where Paul urges us to accept the believer who is weak in faith and still regards one day above another. In first century Judaism, the rabbis forbade Jews from engaging in commerce with Gentiles or even entering Gentile cities or marketplaces on pagan festival days. This might be what Paul is talking about when he says, "One person regards one day above another. Another regards every day alike. Each person must be fully convinced in his own mind." In other words, Paul does not feel it necessary to worry about whether or not a pagan religion happens to be celebrating an idolatrous feast on a certain day. It makes no difference to him. He's not going to behave any differently just because it's some goddess's birthday or something. But if other Jewish believers have those scruples and refuse to go to the marketplace on that day or enter a Gentile city on a pagan festival day, that's between them and God. Because, as we have been stressing, idol worship was such a temptation to fall back into, these new Gentile believers needed to be reminded constantly about the need to separate from idolatry. 1 Corinthians is loaded with instructions about Avodah Zarah, such as in chapter 10, where Paul harkens back to the example of the golden calf and exhorts the Corinthians to not be idolaters. In chapter 5, he exhorts them not to even associate with idolaters. Biblical scholar F.F. Bruce writes, "The fact that they still have to be warned against such vices shows how strong, in a pagan environment, was the temptation to indulge in them after conversion." Cultic worship going on in Corinth was a real source of temptation for new converts, and appears that just like in ancient Israel, the temptation was mixed with sexual immorality as well. Ralph P. Martin states, "For Paul, idolatry suggests the element of licentious and immoral behavior that accompanied the sin of worshiping false deities." It was an ongoing problem and would be for hundreds of years to come. The second century church writer Tertullian was quite prolific in admonishing fellow believers against idolatry. He writes, "Furthermore, you Christians have no acquaintance with the festivals of the Gentiles." He then angrily rebukes, "The Saturnalia, New Year, Midwinter festivals, and Matronalia are frequented by us. There are New Year's gifts, games join the noise, banquets join the din. The pagans are more faithful to their own sect, for even if they had known them, they would not have shared in the Lord's Day or Pentecost with us. For they would fear lest they would appear to be Christians. Yet we are not apprehensive that we might appear as pagans." Ironically, in the second century, one idolatrous custom that really seems to have been an issue is that of decorating one's house with wreaths on pagan festivals. Again, Tertullian rebukes, "Nowadays, you will find more doors of heathens without lamps and laurel wreaths than of Christians. Do you say, 'But the light in front of my doors and the wreaths on my gateposts are an honor to God?' However, they are not there as an honor to God, but to him who is honored in God's place through ceremonial observances of this kind." Additionally, many of the early church writers also appear to follow the Jewish interpretation of not creating any kind of image for fear it would have been worshipped. Because new Gentile believers continued to come from pagan backgrounds, they needed to be constantly warned not to fall back into idolatrous practices. The early church fathers and writers spoke in the strongest possible language against idolatry and participating in idolatrous feasts and activities. They are not at all friendly to the idea of flirting with paganism, syncretism, or adopting any idolatrous customs. In the teachings of the church fathers, idolatry was believed to be the worship of demons, and they condemn it absolutely.